brother, 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 brother. Brother.
Yeah. It is.
Brother.
Oh, yeah. There we go. It is Thursday, May 4th. And it is another episode of the Impact Power Hour and the Deep Six Wrestling Podcast. I'm one half of your host, Ryan.
I am Angelo.
And yeah, Impact, I'd say arguably the biggest hype behind it in quite some time coming into tonight's episode.
Yeah, media wise,
definitely. Yes.
I mean, Impact really doesn't get any like attention in terms of like mainstream media, and it's been getting quite a bit of it with the recent signing.
Yeah. So
and we're not talking about Nick Aldis.
No, absolutely not. No, we're not talking about Nick Aldis. We are talking about Trinity, the former WWE Naomi, not to be confused with the former Knockout Trinity. Which we're talking about in our little group chat about how it's very odd that a company has had two people with the exact same name before.
Yeah, albeit it's been like, you know, almost like a 20-year time difference. So
yeah.
Yeah, it is unusual. Like WWE would never do such a thing.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I can't think of anybody who's for a lot of like the men and stuff, it's different because like normally they have full names. But like
yeah.
A lot of the women in WWE history, and Impact were just like one name people, yeah. Like
Maurice, Oksana,
Melina, Trinity in this case. So it is weird, and it's not like it's a like super common name either. It's just like you could have chose something different, but you didn't. It's okay. It's just very odd for somebody because it's not like it was like a jobber or like enhancement talent who like came in for a few days and that was just the name they gave them. It was somebody who was an established person before. But yeah, Trinity is making her debut tonight.
Live mic. They kept stressing that.
Oh yeah.
Like eight times.
And that this was a milestone event in Impact history, it's weird because whenever I hear milestone, I think it's like a record or like a fundamental, like a something that's seminal to the company. The wording for this was very odd, but also the fact that this was going to be the main event of the show was very interesting. You could have had this kick off the show. You could have had it thrown in the middle. They decide, hey, we're going to make this our main event. We're going to hype it up all night. We're going to hype it up all week, really. Since it was announced or it was shown that she was making her debut at the tapings last week.
I'm for the presentation. Build it up.
Yeah.
A big moment. I mean, it is a big moment in a lot of different, you know, facets. One half of the partnership with Sasha Banks that, you know,
yeah,
upped and left WWE. She is a former WWE women's champion. There's a lot of aspects that are huge about this. But Impact's trying to get more viewers, so I get it. Try to, you know, hype it up. It got a lot of media news, and let's, you know, see how the ratings shake out later this week, early next week, and see if it actually made a difference. I'd be curious.
Yeah. You got a lot of eyes on the presentation for this. I mean, you had TMZ posting an interview with her right before the show went live to talk about why she chose Impact over other companies, what she wants out of Impact, all this stuff. So, I mean, TMZ is probably one of the bigger news outlets out there, at least for pop culture stuff. I wouldn't be able to tell you the last time TMZ was reporting about something in Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, prob- Probably Jeff Hardy showing up drunk to a pay-per-view. Probably the last time.
That's fair.
Said anything about Impact Wrestling.
That's probably fair. Yeah, so we're going to get right on into it. But before we do, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on any of the different platforms that we are on. Also, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Deep Six Wrestling Podcast. It's free. It's easy. You can listen to the podcast on there if you don't want to listen to it on Spotify or Apple or any of that stuff. And also, feel free to follow us on Twitter at Deep Six Wrestling Podcast. No blue check mark for us. Not paying $8 for that. But yeah, we do live tweet. I live tweet most of the Impact shows that I watch live when they're going on. So stay up to date with that if you want. And then we also tweet out other stuff about other wrestling shows when they're going on that we're watching. So yeah, feel free to do that. All right, on to Impact. BTI match was Laredo Kid versus Jack Price. Only thing I'm going to mention about this match is I seriously did not know how life-threatening Laredo Kid's situation was last year. But commentary definitely mentioned it a lot.
Did they go more into it on BTI? Because I know they mentioned it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so they talked about how Laredo Kid had was in a wrestling match, I guess in Mexico, I think they point out, last year, towards the end of 2022. And after the match, he was feeling a lot of discomfort in his stomach and abdomen area. He went to a hospital. They found out that he had some sort of issue that was life-threatening. And he had to have multiple surgeries to try to save his life.
Wow.
And that's why he was out of action for so long, was just the recovery to get cleared. Commentary said that a lot of people wouldn't get back into the ring as quick as he did, or even get it back in the ring at all after a situation like this. But you can't take the fight out of Laredo Kid. But that this is like a situation that, like, it was very close to being no more Laredo Kid. I didn't realize it was like a life-threatening thing. I thought it was just like, hey, we need to do emergency surgery because, like, you can't just have this floating around in there, get cleared up. I didn't realize it seems at least commentary made it seem like it was multiple procedures that had to be done, and that was very close. I don't know exactly, like, they could just be bullshitting, but that seems like a very weird thing to bullshit about. Just good thing that Laredo Kid's back, because I always like Laredo Kid. But I think that was like our big question at the beginning of the year, was like the X Division just felt so stale and it didn't have, you know, the people that we're used to in it all the time. And there's a question answer on why Laredo Kid wasn't there.
Yeah. Not like he was winning a bunch of matches, but he was featured a lot on opening matches of the show.
Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully this now that he's back, hopefully he gets back to 100%. And he can, you know, climb up the rankings. Trey needs a fresh challenger. And I know Trey and Laredo Kid was basically a BTI or opening match of Impact Wrestling so much last year or the last 2 years, basically, but it's been a while. I don't think we've had Laredo Kid versus Trey since Trey went heel. So
that's true.
Fresh matchup. Laredo Kid would pick up the win here. Crowd is really into Laredo Kid. And commentary point out that he does a lot of wrestling in the Chicago area. So, cool. Main show would start off with Brian Myers and Moose versus Yuya Yamura and Bhupinder Gulyar.
They really jump right into it after.
Yeah, there was no entrances for this match.
Yeah. And in the second note, the camera angle.
Yeah, it was a weird camera angle to start off this.
Well, weird to start, but then the rest of the show, we have an improvement from the Toronto shows or the Canada shows and all the other shows that we've watched historically. They're no longer just looking at the entrance ramp.
Yes, they are moving it around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, the match was towards the crowd. It was like the normal AEW, WWE, what we're used to, like, kind of camera angle.
Yeah, it started off at least looking at the screen, like looking at the entrance ramp, and then they turned it to the side, and I was like, "Oh, that's good."
Yeah,
it's definitely a little bit better to watch when you're not just seeing the Impact logo flash on the screen 24/7 throughout the night. But it's also good that get to see the crowd participation.
Right. It feels a little livelier. That's just what's the unfortunate part is when you're looking up the entrance ramp and you're in those like small, middle sized venues, it looks like nobody's in there.
Yeah.
You're missing out on all the crowd.
Yeah. I do want to say the one weird thing about this is if you do have like a section of the crowd that just isn't into it, you're going to notice that. And like the front, like five or six people that were like focused on just did not react to anything. Like they'd stand up for like spots and things like that, but they didn't clap. They didn't show emotion. It was very odd. It's also weird, this arena, because like it's like three rows of people and then a wall.
Yeah, that's true. It's not odd. Like a huge floor level.
No. So it like if you when they weren't, when they're just looking straight at the crowd and the ring, it was very weird looking to see like three rows of people, because if you're just like a fan and you're like tuning in for the first time and you see that, it's like, damn, this is a small ass crowd. Three rows of people you're wrestling in front of.
Yeah.
But then like when you'd see like the action shots on the side, you'd see like it is deeper. It's got a multi-level situation going on. But yeah, a crowd, it is Chicago. It was pretty lively for this show. I don't think it was very lively for a lot of this match. And, I think part of that is because I don't think anybody has a reason to care about Bhupinder and Yuya, just the way they're booked, which kind of makes sense for Yuya because he's still like, he's that New Japan young lion on excursion. But at the same time, you kind of want to win every so often and be presented as like a threat. Whereas Moose and Brian Myers, I don't know what they like. They're just floating in opening match or middle of the show territory where they just have a match, they cheat to win, but they're not progressing up the card or going down the card or looking like they're going to challenge for anything anytime soon.
They'll find their way, I think, as a team. It'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. It's a good fallout from the hardcore war because now it doesn't involve Bully Ray whatsoever. Yeah. So that's exciting by itself.
Yeah.
And I think they're just, clicking together as a team is the idea on camera. So
that's fair.
There's definitely some upward potential for both of them together, whether it's more of like Moose challenging for a title on his own or like, again, going after the digital media or even a tag title match with the both of them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of potential here.
That's fair. Moose and Brian Myers pick up the win. Moose hits a spear onto Bhupinder. After this, we go backstage. Gia is walking backstage and finds this weird little area that's got a sliding door to open. And she opens it, and Shira, Champagne Singh and Macklin are talking about business, about their match later on in the night. And Macklin says that, this is basically a 3-on-1 match because PCO, he's not going to find anybody. And that's his fault for accepting this match. And Champagne Singh pulls out some money and hands it to Gia for a job well done. And Gia accepts it. Then we've got, I think this is arguably this could be the next big hit on Impact's hands in the realm of comedy. It is Dirty Dango's investigation into who attacked Santino.
Yeah, I mean it's a good comedy route, especially since we've learned sadly that Johnny Swinger and Zicky Dice are presumably not going to be a dynamic duo anymore.
Yeah. Which is easily the saddest thing in Impact's history.
Yeah, yeah. I almost wanted to stop watching forever.
Yeah. Fact that, and on top of that, Santino took away Johnny Swinger's first win in, like, ever.
Yeah.
It's, come on. You can't do that to me.
The man needs a win.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why I said, maybe that's who attacks Santino.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it's going to reveal itself to be.
And this is going to be the,
yeah.
You got Sticky versus Dango in the battle of the ridiculousness.
I'm for it.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is playing on Dango's previous fashion police gimmick in WWE, as now he is a detective. But he's already proving to be one of the worst detectives out there, because the one piece of evidence he had, which was some hair that was left at the scene of the crime, he just lost it. He openly says, you know, I don't have it anymore. It doesn't matter. I lost it. His partner for this is his best friend in the world, Joe Hendry. And we've got a list, a wall that looks like
Joe Hendry's swollen up from his broken nose.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, you know. Like I'm sure he got his nose corrected or whatever. Maybe no surgery. Maybe they just put it back in place. But, yeah, that'll happen. Those swollen eyes, you break your nose, you get a big pop into your nasal area. That'll happen. The bags under your eyes.
Yeah. It was very it was very noticeable. I'm glad that they made a point to point that out.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, get punched or something.
Yeah. And he just kind of was like, no.
Yeah. Also, so on this board, which looks like the Always Sunny meme of Charlie just losing it, we've got a bunch of different pictures all over the place on who could have possibly attacked Santino. We've got just some people that I picked up on. I'm sure there are other people, but we have Tyson Tomko, which is great return for him there. Johnny Swinger, Trey Miguel, Killer Kelly with the post-it note of because she her name is Killer.
The rope to Killer Kelly went all the way to Vladimir Kozlov.
Yes. Which makes sense to me.
They're both foreign.
Yeah. this just makes all the sense in the world. Tyler Breeze, who Dango has a very long stare and almost long yearning for, which was great.
And the number one culprit, Mike Tenay.
Yeah, Mike Tenay. Angelo, how do you feel? Do you think Mike Tenay could have done this?
I think so. I think he's itching to get back.
He's itching to take out Santino.
For the name of Don West, for his long partner on commentary, his favorite partner on commentary, Don West.
Yeah, I could see it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe, so Dango claims that it's got to be Mike Tenay. And Joe Hendry says that, well, if we're going to actually investigate this, the last person that we saw before the first attack that had any interaction with Santino was Trey, who was very angry at Santino. So let's start with that. Do you have an idea on who it actually is, Angelo? Because I have an idea. And it's not a good idea, but it's an idea.
Not particularly. I mean, Trey says Dango later, and I was like, that could possibly be the case, but I don't really see the point.
That's who I'm leaning towards. I'm leaning towards Dango. Why would he lose the hair? It's because it's his hair. Why is he wearing a hat to cover up his hair? Because he's missing the hair, Angelo.
But then why do I care?
I don't know. That's why I said it's not a good idea.
Right. Yeah. That's just an where idea. I'm stuck. If it's Dango, why in the hell do I care?
Let's get weird, Angelo.
Let's get weird.
That's what it was all building towards.
That's really all it is. Just filler for Johnny Swinger's vacation this month. Apparently.
He's got to get back to the dungeon.
Yeah. Back to the palace.
Yes, bring back the palace.
Bring back the palace.
Anyway, this would lead to our next match. It is Sami Callihan answering accepting Diener's challenge that he issued last week. Sami Callihan comes out, and the design come out afterwards, and Diener says that he made the biggest mistake of his life by quitting the design and smashing him in the face with a bat. Diener says that he has accepted a challenge. He has accepted Diener's challenge, but it's not a match with Diener. It is a match with Khan.
Ooh.
And yeah, everybody starts beating up on Callihan, and then they exit the ring, except for Khan, and we get a match. Khan versus Sami Callihan. Honestly, this was a match I didn't need to see. It was fine. Yeah. The crowd was just not into this at all. I don't think anybody's into this feud.
I don't know about that. I'm like interested, but like obviously not. Yeah, it's not world title material, but I think it's entertaining in some ways.
I think maybe this is for you then. I just can't invest myself into this because it just feels like the build to this was so lackluster, in my opinion. And then, like we all knew it was either going to be, like, a pointless thing where Sammy becomes the leader of the design, or he was going to turn. He turned on the design, and now he's fighting to get to Diener again, which makes sense to an extent, but it's just such a he has to face people that nobody cares about to get to Diener.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the payout was extremely low.
Yeah.
What's tough is, like, you know, they're basically the blow-off of this whole thing was them losing to Santino Marella.
Yes.
So I think that's what you're struggling with there.
Yes. And, like, what does Sami gain from this? He's facing... He's struggling to face three people who haven't been viewed as actual threats on the roster since Eric Young left.
Yeah, that's also the thing. It's like the design doesn't have really any clout without Eric Young.
Yeah.
Like, as much as they've built it up, they really haven't done Diener any favors. He's not like, no. He hasn't contended for anything. He hasn't won really anything.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of that factor too. It's not like much teeth to it. I like it as a story, but I get what you're saying. There's just not much teeth to like really be like into this.
Yeah. I mean, it's former world champion Sami Callihan fight basically punching down on this on a group that needs to get some legs under it.
Right, right.
Sami beats up on Khan. Khan won't go down. Sami rips up Khan's shirt to chop him for a bit. Sami gets knocked down. Diener then goes to distract, but then Angels gets on the opposite side to actually distract the ref. But instead of this allowing Khan to take advantage, Sami low blows Khan and then asks for Diener to get into the ring. Diener gets onto the apron and instead does a hand sign, and all of a sudden, like 15 to 20 hooded men run into the ring and just pile on Sami. And the ref doesn't throw the match out right away. As this
he waited happening. A little bit.
He waited until Diener gets into the ring, and then they ring the bell. And then Diener tells all the men to get off of Sami so he can hit him in the head with the baseball bat. And then all the designs stand over him. And this is probably the strongest the design has looked since they've shown up.
Yeah, post Eric Young. Like,
yes.
As the design. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. They're not going to have these 15 to 20 hooded men every week. And
maybe they will.
They're just gonna, yeah, I mean, you could.
Yeah, the learning curve did it.
That's fair.
You had that 14-on-1 match
with Big Cass. That's true. As long as we have Brian Myers on commentary to come up with nicknames for each one of them.
Yeah, please.
I wonder how many of them are our former Learning Tree members under the hoods.
Oh, probably 80%.
Good.
Well, what was the one something Lemons?
Manny Lemons.
Manny Lemons.
He's an actual wrestler.
Manny Lemons.
Yeah. I hope he, you know, he would have been a star on AEW Dark. Hashtag wrestling. Maybe he appeared on AEW Dark once.
He might have, yeah.
Hashtag
wrestling. It's been a good name that's shown up in Impact the past few weeks. Terra Rising.
Yes.
That's a great name. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird. So, because when I live tweet, I tag the people who are like wrestling and stuff.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's not her actual wrestling name. Her actual wrestling name is Taylor Rising.
Ah, okay.
Which is, but spelt the last part is spelt the same thing, and Impact improved on her name.
Yeah, no,
you should take it. Yeah, that's such a good name.
Yeah,
get her more so we can hear that. It's a top tier name. It's a top tier wrestling.
Yeah.
After this, we go backstage. Trey is being questioned, interrogated, interviewed by Dango and Hendry. And as we point out, he says that he thinks it was Dango. Also, they try to – the best part of this whole thing is they talk about how, you know, the culprit would be missing some hair. And Trey says, you know, I don't have any hair. I got this short hair that's trimmed up here, and then – I shave all the rest. And Dango says, are you sure you didn't shave down your body after? So you're butt naked when you attacked them?
As the camera closed up on Trey. And
Trey is just very confused. Very confused about this. And he just gets up and leaves. As you do when you're being interrogated. You just get up and leave.
Yeah, it was a very funny scene, and I don't think it's going to lead into a match between any of them. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's just there.
I think there's more people to interrogate. So
yeah, I hope they get through all the roster at this point.
Moose would be great here.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. So is there anybody? PCO, where he just yells Eddie the whole time.
Yeah.
No reason. But
Eddie!
I wonder if he'll start to yell Steve.
Yeah, maybe.
After this we get Jimmy Jacobs interviewing Nick Aldis again, asking about, you know, how he feels about being back on the road with Impact, how he feels about the backstage stuff, how he feels about the world championship situation, and how he's not the first one to get a shot at Macklin. Does he think that he deserved the first shot? Nick says, you know, somebody who comes in, you know, I got all this fanfare, all this stuff, but I knew right away that I wasn't going to be the first one in, and I wouldn't want to just be thrown in right away as the first challenger. I don't want to step over people to do it, but now Macklin has to, or and whoever else gets the title, has to have in the back of their mind that I'm coming for it. And this would bring out Kenny King to interrupt and talk about how, you know, you keep on doing all these interviews, you're saying that you're not stepping in front of people, but you haven't done anything to prove that you should be challenging for the title. You're just doing these interviews. Whereas other people like me are going out there trying to get our names out there, but we can't because you're out here stealing spotlight to do these interviews. To which Nick Aldis says, are you gatekeeping Impact? Which I don't think he is, but that's the line of the night for for Nick Aldis here.
Yeah, I mean, basically it's setting up like they're going to face each other in some sort of big-ish match that's not on BTI.
Yeah. They made it seem like this was going to be like Aldis's first match because Aldis says, "Are you, do you want to have the do you want to welcome me into it, my return, have a return match?" It seems like that's the route they're going. And then at the end of the night, he's like, nah. But we do know who his first person is, the first person to face all this is going to be, which we'll talk about at the end. But Kenny King says that, you know, you've got to work your way up to get to my level. Also, Aldis does point out the last time that the first time Kenny King had jumped into Impact, Nick Aldis was already a world champion, and Kenny King never got to that level. While Aldis has been a multi-time world champion. After Aldis this,
never been on The Bachelor.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that might have been on. Was it the European Gladiator or whatever?
Yeah, he could have been on something.
Yeah.
After this, we get Alicia Edwards versus Jody Threat. This was a good match. I like Jody. She's very stiff. She's very fast paced. She hits an F5 as their finisher. The F416. I should say area
code.
Yeah, it's the Toronto area code.
Oh.
And Alicia loses to Jody Threat. So let me know that Jody Threat has already faced non-enhancement talent, like somebody who is signed quicker than I feel Killer Kelly and Masha both did.
Yeah, that's a good point. They have different strategy when you're a face coming in versus a heel, I guess.
At least in Masha's case, Kelly's a baby face.
I think she was coming in as a heel.
Yeah.
And then now she's turned into the tweener.
Yeah. I mean, her first feud was Tasha.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
It's just the issue with her was just she lives in Portugal. So she doesn't spend all her time in America. So you've got like pick and choose when she comes in, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point.
After this, we get
just to go back to the Jody Strong and Alicia Edwards match, like not the match being so important in itself, but I think it's a good telling point of, you know, how good the women's roster is in Impact Wrestling and how much they've built out the women's roster and how much time they've given each, like, women's, I guess, knockout, you know, call them knockouts. Yeah. How much time they've given each knockout to kind of build out their character. And leading into Trinity's debut tonight, I think it's just like such an important differential factor. Is like a lot of the women's wrestlers in WWE never really get like the time of day to actually like build out their character. Almost they're like the core four, you know, four horsewomen basically. Were like, you know, they really be in the main title scene. Where like Alicia Edwards, like she has a character and she's like the bottom person on the roster.
Yeah.
So it's just cool to see like everyone has a place in Impact Wrestling, from Alicia to Giselle all the way up to Deonna and Jordynne Grace and Mickey. So
yeah.
You know, it's cool to see that. And I wonder how Trinity's going to fit in with that. Cause she never really got a good chance to develop a role outside of like My Shoes Glow.
Yes. Even,
like holding the world title and stuff. Like nothing I've seen was like, you know, she built a lot of character or anything. So it'll be interesting to see her develop in this Impact world.
Yeah. It definitely is going to be something to look at, because again, as you point out, like her big two selling points, and this was always like a complaint that Rob had about her character when she was champion in WWE, was that her gimmick was she's athletic and she dances and glows, which that's not a character, that's just
attributes.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, as you point out, everybody in Impact kind of does have some sort of character development. So just being, I'm former WWE talent.
That's not going to cut it.
Right. Yeah. No. You've got to do something more. So,
and I'm hope she's ready for the challenge.
Absolutely.
Why she chose Impact.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I'm hoping for the best. And we'll learn more as the weeks go on. After this, we get Gia interviewing the Motor City Machine Guns backstage.
Favorite team.
Yeah, everybody's favorite team. Chris Sabin talks about how, you know, he pinned Trey Miguel, so he's got to go at Under Siege, the name of his second favorite Steven Seagal movie.
Yeah.
Angela, what's his first favorite?
I believe that's Under Siege 2.
Yes, absolutely. It is. Which got Alex Shelley audibly and visually dying of laughter.
Yeah.
As he tried to compose himself during
the interview. Like those Chris Farley SNL skits where David Spade's got to keep his composure.
Yes. Or like any Sami Zayn promo when he was in the Bloodline and they just pan to the Usos who are just like hiding their faces because they can't keep their faces straight. So he Sabin says that Under Siege, it's official. He is going after Trey Miguel for the X Division Championship and he is going to become a 9-time champion.
I'm not gonna say nine times. Booker T would, and that was pretty great.
Yes, and so Gia asked Alex Shelley, "What's gonna happen for you then? Since he's going for the X Division title?" And he said, "Well, people keep on saying that I'm the greatest Impact wrestlers never won the World Championship, so I guess I should go after and go do that." So he's throwing his name in the hat to be a challenger for Macklin in the future. Or PCO. So that should be good. I don't know if I see Alex Shelley winning. And I think that's probably the biggest complaint that people are going to have on his career is that he never got to win the big one. But yeah, he puts on great matches and he's a great tag wrestler. And I'm assuming he won the X Division title.
I thought so. But he would need like a total rebranding if he was going to become like a world title. Like a serious world title contender.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't think he's got enough interest to really shake up his career. Like, I think he's pretty happy being like Chris Sabin's tag partner, wrestling when he can, and also, you know, doing his full-time job. He's like a PT person, physical therapist. So I just don't think he's in a place where he's gonna like totally like turn his career upside down and make a world title run like as a evil Alex Shelley or something like that.
Well, it's weird because like I do follow them on social media, and I guess I think it's in Pro Wrestling Revolver, Callahan's promotion. He's the world. Shelley's the world champ there. And he's a heel, and Sabin is also a heel with him. He helps him win matches and stuff, which is very interesting. And they like they put promos on like social media of them, and it's just very weird seeing and, like, the two people that are like baby faces just cutting these promos about how everybody's scumbags and they hate like dropping F bombs and all this stuff.
I gotta watch that. That's kind of cool.
It's fantastic.
I mean, yeah, they're like messing up the little the theory I just put out, basically. Like, you know, how would it be like if you just tried to turn the world upside down and
win
a world title? Yeah.
So yeah, they are very active on the independent scene. They point that when they re-signed with Impact, I guess. Last, like right before Rebellion, they'd said the reason they keep on signing multi-year deals with Impact is because they're allowed to go to GCW, to Pro Wrestling Revolver, to New Japan.
They showed up on AEW.
Yeah. So, good stuff. After this, we get part two of our sit-down interview with Frankie Kazarian talking about his ROH days and joining AEW. I like this. I feel like it's very short, and the commentary points out afterwards that parts one and two are going to be available on YouTube for free. But like, it feels like this I mean, I'm assuming when all the parts come out, it will be a longer interview, but it feels it felt like this was more of a snippet of an interview than like a real big deep dive into the 7 years between
the way commentary like put it didn't make it sound like there's gonna be like a full interview. It felt like for part one and two out on socials, but it would be cool if there was more.
We do know that
his rife with AEW and like, you know, albeit probably kayfabe, you know, beef with AEW, it's an interesting point because it's like he was kind of gonna just be another member of the roster. He was the, kind of at that point. I mean, he was an inaugural tag champ there. Yeah. But beyond that, I don't think he was clearly not in the spot. And it's kind of Christopher Daniels is there too. Like, they're not in spots where they're going to all of a sudden be main event caliber wrestlers on that roster. There's just the roster's loaded. They're kind of more looked at as good hands at the time more than anything. So it is an interesting point because, you know, in Impact, he's really going to try to be just a good hand. He wants to be the main event.
Yeah. I think that also goes to that whole idea of like one of the big criticisms of AEW, at least especially in the early days, was like, oh, it's all friends wrestling. If you're friends with a wrestler that's on the roster, you're going to get signed and their friends are going to get signed. And I feel like at least the way that he was phrasing things where he was like, we came in and I was great friends with the Bucks. I was good friends with a lot of people on the roster. I thought we were going to be hired. I was going to be doing all these different things and they just never materialized. It makes it feel like maybe some of the wrestlers got like sold in on that as well, where they're like, okay, well, I'm friends with this guy. I don't need to politic my way to the back. I've already done that because I'm friends with them. And if they're going to be presented well, since I'm their friend, I'm going to be presented well too. Whereas you've got to do some more, but also you've got to realize that just because you're friends, you're not automatically a champion.
Yeah.
Especially with that as loaded of a roster that they were.
Yeah, I don't think anything out of the promo itself was implying any of that type of stuff. Like he was saying, like, yeah, I was friends with Matt and, you know, the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes at the time, and our contracts were ending, so he ended up being part of that first iteration of AEW, and that ended up being true. But I think then him staking grounds beyond that, I think that was, you know, it's kind of on him. But him and Christopher Daniels, I'm lumping them together because they were a tag team, like. They are on the older side of, you know, wrestlers where like Tony Khan is more interested in looking at Jungle Boy and MJF. So I get why he wasn't putting too much stake into, you know, Daniels and Kaz in terms of like real TV time consistently. Yeah. They were getting plenty in the beginning. Yeah. But I mean, I get like they were good hands. Like Luther isn't going to all of a sudden be a main event caliber, you know, member of AEW's roster. He's there because he's a veteran and has had some TV time and kind of knows how to work things. So
yeah,
that's kind of what Kaz was. And to be fair, it's just rehashing. It's like he's never hit that mold before. So Tony Khan was kind of looking for guys that have like kind of carried the torch before, or you're really young. And Kaz was neither. So I think he needs to, like he said, he wants to kind of take his ball and make the most of it somewhere else. And Impact Wrestling is probably the best spot for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is probably his best fit as well. I do wonder, just because I saw what was going on Ring of Honor tonight. Like Christopher Daniels was challenging for a championship on Ring of Honor again tonight.
Yeah, that's cool.
I feel like he's like a regular on Ring of Honor. I feel like that would be like somewhere that Kazarian would be if he had stuck with AEW. They probably would have moved him over to Ring of Honor at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
He'd be gaining a lot of TV time, but again, I don't think he'd be winning matches regularly. Just like Christopher Daniels, I don't think is winning matches regularly. He's just like you say, a good hand over there.
Yeah, which you know, I mean, Christopher Daniels himself, he's over 50 years old. He's done a lot in the industry. So, like, it's a role that just makes sense at the time. Kaz wants to do more, and I think Impact could give him that ceiling. I don't necessarily see a path now with Nick Aldis here, but he has potential more than he would have at AEW.
Yes, agreed. This would lead us to Steve Maclin, Champagne Singh, and Shira versus PCO and his two mystery partners, which are Heath and Rhino.
Well, he comes out with no partner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He was ready to face them 3-on-1. Yeah, this man was not backstage asking anybody for help.
Every time, like from the history of ever watching wrestling, it's like, oh, you got to find two mystery partners. Like, usually then you watch the wrestler like talk to people backstage and start trying to make friends. No. There was zero of that with PCO. So yeah. Then this match, he just comes out by himself, and like the ref's like basically about to ring the bell because he's not like looking down the ramp for partners. He's just like, I'm ready to fight people.
Yeah, he's taking off his shirt or his jacket. He's running the ropes.
Yeah, exactly. And commentary's like, well, I guess this isn't totally shocking. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and also PCO, I'm pretty sure, knows three words, and two of them are, one of them is Eddie, and the other one is his own name.
Yeah, right. So saving the day, then, you know, hits the gore on the Titantron, and Heath and Rhino have a mic, and they say, like, we know you want to just beat the crap out of them, but we have an issue with them, too, so
yeah,
we'll be your partners. So the PCO wasn't going to say no. So
no, I don't think he knows the word no yet.
No, it's on this catalog.
Yeah. So this happens. Commentary confused me on this because they're like, oh, you know, this is Maclin trying to weasel his way away from PCO by making this a 6-man match. He didn't make this match. But also, they talk about how, you know, he had the changing of the guard ceremony, and that was to try to prevent PCO from getting to him. But PCO wasn't the challenger at that point.
And, yeah. And
Matt Raywalt points that out. He was like, he didn't know that PCO was coming for him because that wasn't made known until the end of the night. And, like, yeah, that's very true. Like, true. None of this has been, like, Maclin not trying to get in the ring with PCO. It's just been how things have happened. PCO faces Champagne Singh last week, and it grew into a beatdown.
Yeah, and Singh set the match again.
Yeah. Champagne Singh also has, in my opinion, the best wrestling tights in the business right now.
Pretty glittery.
Lots of glitter, and he's got the two champagne bottles exploding on each side. I thought that's great. Fits. And, yeah. This was obviously not going to be a match that Champagne Singh was going to win. Champagne Singh does get some action in here before tagging in Shira. And Shira takes it to PCO for a bit. Then once Shira starts to look like he's got PCO a little worn down, there's some tags made. Maclin finally comes in. PCO ends up getting back into the ring after Heath makes a little comeback. PCO tags himself in. Maclin decides, you know what, I'm about out of here at this point. I'm tired of this. I don't want to get hurt. I'm just going to walk away. But he's walking away from the ramp, which was weird. And he's walking like the opposite side of the ring. And Rhino just comes in and hits him with a really good gore. Which the crowd went absolutely nuts
for. Rhino's got that dog in him still.
Absolutely he does. Shearer attacks PCO in the turnbuckle area. Then PCO comes over and looks like he's gonna go and jump onto Maclin's body, but then Champagne Singh was back in the ring. And, like, he goes to get PCO's attention. PCO turns his attention to him and starts marching him back. And Raj is, or Champagne, is like, oh, now he's scared. So he pulls out a wad of cash and starts flipping money at him to try to get him to stop. But Heath comes in, hits the wake-up call. And then PCO goes to the top rope, hits the PCO assault, and picks up the win. And then there's the good big visual of just money all over the place.
Yeah, the ref was very concerned with piling up that money.
Yeah, he raises the hands of the competitors and then immediately drops it and starts picking up the cash.
Yeah, I mean, I would too.
Yeah. After this, we get a vignette with the Coven. They are Taylor Wilde specifically is lighting a candle with Jordan and Deanna's name on it. And when the fire or when the candle goes out, they will disappear from Impact. I don't. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
After this, we go. We're sticking with the magic stuff, as Jessica and Rosemary are just in a hallway, and Rosemary has a cleaver in her hand, which I thought was that's fantastic stuff. I too like to walk around in hallways with cleavers.
Yes.
But they're at this door and they can't get into the door because Rosemary's magic won't work to open it. So she has to call on somebody to get them in the door. And that somebody is Father James Mitchell, baby. And they want to get to the undead realm. Rosemary says Jessica can't go. Jessica says she can handle it. And Rosemary says, I'm not losing you again and having to search the undead realm again. Because it's already happened once, and I don't want to have to find two people in there because they are trying to get Taya back, which I'll be honest, I don't think Taya's coming back. But Rosemary goes with Father James Mitchell to the undead realm. They give a hourglass to Jessica and says that when it runs out, she'll be back. After this is Jonathan Gresham versus Mike Bailey 4. Jonathan Gresham with just a mustache looks very weird.
I like the look.
It's going to take time for me to get used to it.
Did he have a stud earring in too?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's a different look for him.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's just very...
It's different. Just,
yes. And which is why it's going to take some time to get used to. I thought this might have been their best match of the four. I thought it was definitely better than the third one that ended in a no contest. But I think it could be argued, I think, that it was better than their two previous encounters.
I liked it a lot. Had
finishers. Yes. Again,
Gresham pretty much controlled most of the way through, would say. Like, he was very methodical throughout the whole match. He pretty much had Mike Bailey grounded, except for a few moments here and there, but it was really a Gresham match the whole way. And I think this is the best way for Impact to use Gresham. Just basically put him in showcase matches like this. That's your best use of him.
Yeah. Build him back up, build him to something where, he's beating people regularly and not taking pins. And then you can either send him to the X Division and go for the title there, or send them to the digital media championship, just send them for anything, but you've got to actually have like a sustained amount of wins for this guy instead of just, being in matches, having them either DQs or multi-man matches where he's eating a pin or things like that.
Yeah, because he doesn't have enough of an Impact resume to kind of just validate that. Like if Nick Aldis comes in and wins two matches and loses instantly, it's like, oh, well, he was a world champ here.
Right. Like have him, he's beaten Speedball 2 out of the 4 times that they faced, have him beat some more people in the X Division, like a Laredo Kid or
Taruse.
Yeah, even though I don't want Taruse ever to lose, I want Taruse to go undefeated
forever. No, I agree, but you can find street talent that's going to be
good
for Gresham to face because he puts on good matches with most people, it seems like.
Yeah. And you could even have him with some of the lower card guys in the bigger scene. You'd have him going against Kenny King. You could have him going against Champagne Singh and Shira to rack up some more impressive wins for him because they're bigger than him. Things like that.
Yeah, true.
Main thing in this match, though, is Speedball is having issues with his wrist and hand again. Bailey keeps on going over and over again, trying to get control of the match, but he just can't. Gresham, as Angelo's point out, had control of him, had control of the ring for almost all of this match. Bailey takes Gresham down towards the end of this match. Crowds, we actually get a "This is awesome" chant, which I feel like is a rarity on TV matches to get for Impact. Just because a lot of the times the crowds just aren't as hot. But this is, again, as I said at the beginning, pretty hot crowd. They both have the wrist locks in at the exact same time towards the end here. Mike headbutts Gresham. Gresham blocks it. As Mike goes for it again, Bailey goes and does his really fast-paced kicks, then launches Gresham into the turnbuckles and hits his tornado kick across the ring, goes for Ultimo Weapon. Gresham gets out of it and then locks in the octopus stretch, to which Bailey has to tap. And yeah, Jonathan Gresham picks up a big win. After this, we go backstage. Sami Callihan is talking with Rich Swann.
Backstage. We haven't seen Rich Swann in a bit, right?
I think the last time I can think of Rich Swann was maybe him versus Josh.
Yeah,
maybe wow. he was back. Maybe he had like a backstage segment.
He was in back, between. But I don't think he's been back since Josh relinquished the title.
Yeah. That's fair. Rich is, or Callahan says that, you know, I don't like to, I can normally pick fights with a lot of people, one-on-one, or two-on-one, three-on-one, all this stuff, and I don't want to ask for help. But this is going on too much. I've got my issues with the design, and you kind of owe me one or a few. So I'm asking you to help me out here. Rich Swann says, I don't think I owe you. And Sammy brings up how he used to lend him his house to stay at,
right,
with his dad, all this stuff. He says he's not going to listen to Swann running down why he shouldn't be picking fights with big groups of people. He just wants to know if he's going to help him or not. And there's not really an answer here. But it's not a no. It's more of just a like an open-ended thing.
Which, I mean, I think it should be just a no. Sami Callihan's a maniac.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would make things more interesting because then it's like Sammy did all this stuff to try to break down the design. And like if he, now that all the design is against him, he's looking for help. And people are like, no, you kind of did this to yourself, dude.
Right.
It would be a very interesting dynamic to go with. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. After this, we learn that during the break, Macklin confronted Scott and said that he wanted Rhino punished for goring him outside the ring.
Even though it was a match.
Yep. And DeMore says, you know what? Next week, you've got it. I'll punish him. You can have a match with Rhino. But you have to bring your A game and your title because it's for the title. So Rhino in 2023 has a world championship match. Did you ever think you'd say it?
You deserve it.
Also next week, we have Nick Aldis having his debut match against Sheldon Jean, who's appeared on BTI a few times. I think he had one or two matches on TV as an enhancement.
He's the man that broke Joe Hendry's nose.
That's true. He's really good. I've liked him when I've seen him wrestle. So
noses don't like him though.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
Yeah.
We also have Killer Kelly versus Masha Slamovich, and the part three of Frankie Kazarian's interview with Gia Miller.
Just to go back a step.
Yeah.
Can Masha lose again?
I think she's going to.
That's crazy.
The only reason I think she's going to lose is because they've already announced that Killer Kelly has a title shot against Deonna that happened at these tapings.
Oh.
So it would be very odd for her to lose and then they reward her.
That'd be very WWE-esque.
That would be. But, yeah, I think that's Killer Kelly's going to win and get the title shot. Which is fine, but at the same time, what the hell have they done with Masha? They built this person up for 9 months undefeated.
That's what I was worried about though last year. I was like, you know, it could go a couple ways. You know, it could go the Vladimir Kozlov way, where you know, you build someone up and then you have no idea what to do after they have their first loss. And they you know, she had some good rivalries, you know, rematches after her first actual loss, but now it's the wheels have totally fallen off.
Yeah. And I think we pointed this out when Killer Kelly debuted, that it was going to be weird having two people with basically the same gimmick where one of them's a babyface and one of them's a heel.
Yeah.
But they're both like unstoppable, very violent individuals. What do you do with either of them? Kelly's had a few losses already. Yeah, pretty early on in her career in Impact. But
her character just seems a little better to bounce back with. So.
Yes, absolutely, because she's portrayed as like she learns, but also that she doesn't care about her wins and losses as much, whereas Masha clearly does care about her wins and losses, but she just keeps losing at this point.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what happens with Masha, because again, it's so weird to see her betrayal and Impact, and then the few shows I've seen of her, like the few shows during that she's done since she's won the GCW title, where she's just like booked really well, is just bizarro land to me. Also, it's very weird seeing that she like doesn't have an accent when she's booked in Impact, that she only speaks Russian. Whereas she just has an American, she just speaks English in real life. And it just totally blows my mind.
That is great.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure they'll have a good match. Definitely two sides of the same coin here. But then their trajectories after being flipped is just wildly weird. And finally, we also have a Knockouts tag team title match next week. The Coven versus Deonna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace. Angelo, you know what I'm going to say about that?
It's about to get mild.
No, can they coexist, Angelo? Can Jordynne Grace and Deonna Purrazzo coexist on the same team?
Yeah, that's
my favorite trope.
Can they coexist? Yeah.
My favorite wrestling trope has come back.
They're going to mention it quite a few times.
I hope so. Speaking of that, Trinity debuts as our main event. The crowd here did not know this was happening. Unless you were reading like as the show was going on when the tapings were happening, that she was going to come out. Or that she was going to make her debut. So this was a really loud pop. This went on for...
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. The crowd was, like, genuinely surprised.
Yeah, this wasn't something like there were no vignettes leading up to this. There was no rumors or innuendos online, like, in the weeks prior that she was having meetings with Impact. It was just, like, she was backstage in GCW. She was backstage... at Stardom shows with and New Japan shows with when Mercedes was wrestling, she was at like doing random indie shows, like, and she was in the backstage area for. And then the Chicago shows comes up and it's announced that Trinity's making her debut. It's like, oh, okay, came out of nowhere.
Now, has Trinity been wrestling since her debut?
She has not wrestled a single match since.
Okay. She's been like doing negotiations and stuff.
So apparently, from the interviews that I've seen and like the snippets, apparently she had some injuries that she needed to deal with, that she was taking time off from, as well as she honestly thought she was just going to quit for a while. But then, like, she saw like Mercedes doing her own thing, and she was starting like traveling again. And she just got the urge to get back into it.
So, yeah, that's what happens sometimes. I mean, you're a true wrestling fan. That's just what happens.
Yeah. So she comes into the ring. She says it feels good to be back in a place where she can glow. Says that the Knockouts division has always been, in wrestling history, has always been the place for fierce competition. She's always wanted to be a part of that. She mentions that it's had top tier talent such as Awesome Kong, Gail Kim, Mickey James, Deonna Purrazzo, and Jordan Grace in its history, and she hopes that she can name her add her name to that list. She says that she's here to win more gold and that she's ready to shine, and she is going for the Knockouts World Championship. Deonna comes out.
Here, I'll stop there.
Yes.
Nothing too impressive for me on the mic. No. Right there.
No.
It's a rundown of, like, I mean, you just said it all, but it's a rundown of, I was in WWE, I won a championship there, Impact has a lot of history, and, like, that's kind of all we got there. We didn't get much of that character development I was, like, looking forward to, you know, going into it. But, you know, there's still a lot of time to be had. She signed the contract, but
yeah,
she didn't offer much in that first shot. Basically.
No, this is a very much a generic, hey guys.
Yeah. For something that was hyped up 8 times, like, there's gonna be a live mic on Trinity tonight.
Yeah.
Didn't deliver in that sense.
No. Deonna comes out and says that since she was invoked by name, she would come out to what be the first to welcome her to Impact. Deonna says that Trinity, it's good that Trinity knows that has done her homework and knows that she's walking into a company that is run by the Virtuosa, but she needs to know that this is not the same age of the Virtuosa in the past. This is a new age, a better age. And that she also says that she was a few years ago, she was in the same spot that Trinity is now, and that it can be a very nervous experience to come into a company after not being in one for a bit, but makes it clear that she won't just walk out and get a match with Deonna for the title. She has to earn it. And she also says that Trinity says that when she steps into the ring again, she will be wishing that she got fired.
All right.
Yeah. Jordan comes out, and Jordan says that, oh, is it hot in here, or is it just the heat between you two? And then Jordan says that you don't need to talk to Deonna about getting a title match, because come Under Siege, I'm going to be back holding the championship, so everything runs through me. Trinity says that she's ready for either of them, but then Jordan just kind of focuses all on selling the match for Under Siege, and Trinity walks away, or I should say dances away up the ramp, as Deonna and Jordan stare down to end the show. As you point out, don't think there's much character development or anything like that when it comes to Trinity, at least on the mic tonight. I don't think there's any groundbreaking news with her here. I think we all knew it was going to be her kind of putting the world on notice that she's an Impact and that she wants a championship, because I don't think anybody comes into a company and doesn't say that. And I think Deonna and Jordan were just furthering this along, because you need to build up their feud a little bit more, because this is at this point a blood feud.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Jordan said, I'm not going to lose to you for a fourth time.
Yeah.
I mean, Jordan, if she loses this time, she can't challenge Deonna for the title.
Yeah.
So that's a big stipulation.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you know, leads us, like, we've speculated a little bit if we think Jordan might take a leave of absence or something of that sort for a while.
Yeah, I still think she does. I think that it would be very odd to throw the title from Jordan to Mickey, then Mickey having to vacate it, throwing it onto Deonna just for Jordan to get it back at the first time of asking. I think that's very slippy, floppy, weird. I understand that this definitely felt like Jordan is going more on the heel direction. And I think that makes sense. But at the same time, it just feels very odd that they would put the title right back onto Jordan this quickly after her like losing it at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it wouldn't have won. I flip-flop between what would make sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to, like, because then it's once she loses, or if she wins it, then Deanna's going to get another shot at the title. Which, so this feud's going to continue, but also at the same time, it feels like I feel like Trinity has to get in the title quick. I think Trinity gets in the title picture quicker than Nick Aldis gets in the title picture for the world title.
I think I agree with that.
Just because Trinity's a much bigger deal than Nick Aldis is. So I feel like Trinity is more likely a Slammiversary opponent for the championship than Nick Aldis is the Slammiversary opponent of Macklin.
Yeah, I mean, that's still possible, too.
Yeah, it is. But I feel like with Shelley already kind of throwing his name into the hat for the future, I feel like he could just be the against all odds person.
Yeah.
But there's like a week of build in between that and Under Siege, I think. So I feel like Alex Shelley might get like a longer deal than just a week of build and then lose and then go back to the tag division.
I don't know. He might not.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll find out. But yeah. Overall, Angelo, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle of the show.
It's a thumbs up show, even though I'm being critical of the Trinity stuff. You know, her debut is still exciting nonetheless.
Yes.
I mean, overall, it's a very strong show.
I agree. I would give it a thumbs up as well. Again, very similar to you. I'm interested to see where the Trinity stuff goes. Hopefully, I think the big test is going to be how she does in her second promo, because I'm sure she's going to have another promo segment, but also how she does in her first match back in the ring in almost a year or a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, her athletic ability is her selling point. So, well, you know, it'll be cool to see it with like a clashing style eventually with Deanna, who's more of a technical ground person, or a Jordan, who's power. So there's a lot of, you know, potentially great matchups that can come down.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is going to be it from us. Hopefully we'll be back next week with another episode. But thank you guys for listening. And stay safe.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye.